This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Follow us on social media at Auto Trader SA on Facebook and Twitter. And remember to use our hashtag Auto Central. Lineup in the studio today, George Mooney as usual. How are you, George?
Tough, aren't you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. We also have Craig Lampton here from Fired Up Motorcycles. Craig, welcome to Auto Central.
Thanks, Soda. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's very nice to have you in studio, and looking forward to our chat later. And then we've got Fazana here, who's doing our social media live from the studio. Hello, Fazana. How are you? Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good, thanks. Right, well, let's kick things off this morning, and let's have a look at what's been happening in the world of motoring over the last 2 weeks. And a nice story coming out of Puerto Rico is that they've actually made it a crime to smoke inside a vehicle if the passenger is younger than 18 years of age. And I see that in South Africa, our age limit is 12, yet you still see a hell of a lot of people smoking in cars with children, and it's bad. It's so wrong.
It's so wrong, you know, but how do you police it? I mean, you can't police it in this country. You know, how much resource has gone into actually promulgating that law?
Well,
and then you promulgate a law that you can't police.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the thing. And I mean, George, we've spoken about this a number of times. Mm. It's all fair and well having the law, but if you can't enforce it, then there really isn't a point. And it's also about educating people on the laws. I bet you now half the people in this country don't actually know what laws do or don't apply.
So I just think it's a moral thing. You smoke with kids in the room, you know, you're doing something to their lives without their consent,
100%.
Or they know, or you know, they don't know what the effect is on their own lungs and stuff. So
exactly.
I think it's
listen. And I come, I mean, you know, my mother used to smoke, and I used to scream and shout in the car, like she'd literally sit with my head out the window like a Labrador. But it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
You know, kids arriving at school with smoky blazers and whatnot. But I mean, I suppose in the past, you know, you used to smoke anyway. We were talking in the office the other day, aeroplanes, shopping centres. Oh yeah, here's a beautiful garment, and let me have a tug on my Texan while we talk about
Texan,
you know,
plane.
Exactly, Texan plane.
Yeah, so, well, hopefully they can police it.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and they can get it right. You know, they've got it right in restaurants. So, and as George says, it's a moral thing. So let's hope it. It's open 16.
Well, I think the way they've done it is really great. So if a violator will face a $250 penalty, the official said that 10% of the money collected for those fines will go to the pediatric center in Puerto Rico's largest public hospital. So they're obviously using it to generate funds for a good cause, which I clearly buy into.
No, so anyway, just a spot fine. Pay it now.
Pay it right there on the spot.
Yeah. But then you get corruption, so maybe it's not a good idea.
Well, can you imagine if we had, I mean, I used to think about this in Durban, you know, people who are littering. You should be able to issue a spot fine there and then, and the person issuing the fine should be paid a commission on that fine. So let's say the fine's $250, the person gets 50 rand, which means that they will then go and look for people who are breaking that law, and it could literally fund itself. So that was just something.
But there. I mean, that's the stick side, which I think should be there. But then there's the positive side. Incentivize people to do it. Make it fun. I mean, remember years ago there was that Zappa in the Zeebee.
Yes, exactly.
That worked well.
Yeah.
You know, that worked really well. It, you know, it irks me when people chuck stuff out of windows of cars.
Yeah, no, that really creates my goat as well. Some really, really fantastic news for the motor side is we're going to have a 63%. Petrol price increase by the 63 cents a liter. At the end of the month. I mean, that's
crazy.
It really it doesn't help us, does it? Because it's just more money out of your pocket at the end of the month.
Yeah,
I think it's off the back of the weakening rand.
Well, you know, the rand hasn't performed too well, so that's exactly why.
Probably a good time to get onto a motorcycle.
Well, there
exactly.
we go.
Exactly.
Punter.
Go and visit Fired It Up. Exactly. He'll get your motorcycle.
Exactly. Oh, we're going to talk about that all just now. I don't know if you guys recall, but there was another taxi strike at the back end of last week.
Yeah.
It was last week. There was another taxi strike. And this one on the back of the taxi drivers, you know, throwing their toys out the cot because they want all of their fines, you know, Squashed. And I don't buy into that. I really don't. I think if you're breaking the law, I mean, there was an accident this weekend, taxi, 27 people, the brakes failed. Well, I'm not surprised because you've overloaded it and you were speeding. So I'm surprised, you know, it makes sense that your brakes aren't going to work if that's what you're doing to the car. And people are losing their lives and these guys are breaking the law. I've got no issue with taxi drivers. I think it's a, I think what they do and the service they perform helps majority of the commuters in this country, but they just are completely lawless.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I always maintain, anybody who gets upset with a taxi cutting them off or with a taxi doing whatever they do, I mean, I'm not condoning their driving behaviors, but there are 16 people in that taxi.
Yeah.
You know, if you do anything to that taxi, you're potentially putting people at risk that are innocent inside that taxi.
Yeah.
So cut the guy off, do what you need to do, and you're putting those people at risk inside the taxi. Plus, imagine there were 16 cars in front of you.
Well, exactly.
Because if every single one of those people had cars, our road infrastructure just wouldn't cope. So, so I, you know, I've got a lot of respect for those taxi drivers, because quite often I think it's not the taxi driver themselves, it's the infrastructure behind them and the regulation behind them that isn't fit for purpose.
Do you think that they're getting put? I mean, they're obviously put under pressure to bring in the numbers at the end of the day, and I think that's maybe why they, you know, it's not a case of cool, I'm going to drive, and if I only do 3 drives today, it's fine. They've obviously got a quota to meet.
Well, as far as I believe, the way the taxi industry works is the driver has a minimum amount of money that he has to bring in. Yeah. And after that minimum, he then makes money for himself. And that minimum goes to the taxi taxi owner themselves.
So, yeah, anyway, so, my take is that those, if you're driving on the roads, you should be abiding by the laws of the road. And that's the bottom line.
I agree with you. I think these guys have a right to earn a living and are under huge pressure to earn that living. But when it comes to fines and protesting not to pay fines, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with that.
Held accountable to the law.
I mean, and I watched, there was video footage on the net last week, a guy traveling down the N3 on his way through to Midrand, plows into the back of a bucky.
And try to escape.
Massive carnage. Yeah, and then you see the guy try and drive away. Thank goodness for motorists who went, hang on a sec.
Yeah,
you know, we try to block
this
guy off and make sure that he actually faces the music.
And apparently the gentleman didn't even have a license.
That's obviously why he wanted to drive away, because he knew. But I mean, if you don't have a license, A, you shouldn't be on the road, and then B, don't drive like a chop.
No.
It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. And I applaud those gents who pulled him over.
Yep.
They didn't incite any nonsense. They just pulled him over and said, please wait.
Yeah, just hang on a second. You can see the guy taking pictures with his phone and stuff like that. So nice to know that there are still some genuine people out there on the roads who are happy to, who do understand what is right and what is wrong. And you know what? They came to, I mean, that poor guy that got hit, I mean, he was completely, you know, spun around and
he was very lucky, I think, because I don't think he died, did he?
No, I don't think there were any fatalities from the accident. I haven't picked anything up. Cool. Then on to some more positive news, and I think this is really fantastic, and it's becoming a pattern that we're highlighting. George, is a number of South Africans who are really doing phenomenally on an international level. And I don't know if you guys ever remember in 1991 there was a BMW 525i that BMW commissioned a Indebele artist by the name of Esther Mlangu to paint Indebele artwork on the 525. And it was the first kind of art car that was ever done. Mm. That art car is now currently sitting in the British Museum in London under South Africa, the Art of a Nation. So it's on display. And I mean, it's warms amazing. My heart that, you know, these kind of things are happening. What's really nice to know that is that, last year she was commissioned again by BMW to paint the new new 7 series. And they've just got those panels back, the panels back for the vehicle that she painted, and that vehicle has been put on display in a massive art fair, also in the UK. So, you know, hats off to her for
fantastic. There's so much talent in this country, you know, to see it coming out in the automotive sector is just
it really is good. And what I like about it the most is that these cars that BMW are commissioning in terms of this artwork, it's the heritage of BMW's motoring in South Africa. So they've got the 5 Series in the Indebele artwork. They've now got the 7 Series. And these pieces will now travel the world as kind of car art, but a heritage to BMW's involvement in South Africa, yeah, which I really think is really, really nice to see. So
brilliant.
Hats off to... Well done, and I was actually thinking, do we have a car museum in this country that has all the heritage lines of vehicles?
No, I mean, I suppose the closest to that is there's a wine farm in Cape Town, a wine owner that has a showroom. You know, and I think there are a couple of museums, but I don't think it's as big as this.
Yes, I mean, no one's really, I mean, there's not a museum out there where you can go and look at the history of VW, the history of Audi, the history of Jag, etc., with the lineup of the vehicles.
I've been to a couple of private,
yes,
privately owned collections, which are
unbelievable.
Unreal, but
yeah.
I think publicly, no.
Well, who knows, in the future of motoring, we might all have our own little collections, as we were alluding to off-air.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The one in Stellenbosch is called the Rupert Museum, which is phenomenal. I mean, he's got so many cars that it rotates. He rotates the cars in the showroom.
Oh, wow.
So there's never the same configuration of cars standing in the showroom. So if you go there today and you go there next month, it's a different configuration of cars.
Oh, geez. And you say the Rupert Museum.
Yeah.
Not Anton Rupert.
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
No. That's still a private collection.
It's a private collection,
that he puts on show.
Yes.
Jeez, man.
That's
private
amazing.
Collection. Rupert and Rothschild.
Allows that.
Yeah. Wow. I see General Motors have unveiled a $5,000 electric car in China to take on the Tesla's affordable Model 3. Now, we've been chatting a lot about Tesla and what they're doing, and I think this is a really great story. So as Tesla prepares to launch its affordable Model 3, which they've already done, General Motors have unveiled a tiny electric car that costs only $5,000. It's called the Baojun. Baojun E100 can travel about 100 miles on a single charge, and it's been touted as the perfect vehicle for commuters. The only problem is it's available in China. However, though, it might be extended to the rest of the world based on its success. That for me sounds like a win. If you're traveling into the city, that is a city vehicle. I mean, it makes sense in my head.
Looks like about a little bit like a smart car.
It does look like a little smart car.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
I had a look at the interior and stuff like that. It really, really looks nice. Can reach a top speed of 62 miles an hour. So what's that, about 120 odd? So it's low highway speeds.
Yeah, if you've traveled around Europe, you know, a car like that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
It really does.
So, you know, let's see what...
Africa, it's a long way off, but around Europe, Italy, places like that, cars like that.
Makes complete sense.
Makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I was thinking, you know, in terms of, you know, the South African kind of motoring constitution, which I think we can take it upon.
South African motoring.
Well, this is now something that we're going to claim, George, and I think what we're going to slowly start doing is just talking about things that what would make city driving or driving in South Africa just an absolute pleasure. So, imagine if you're going into the city, you're only allowed to go in if you take a taxi or if you drive an electric vehicle. What would that do to, you know, to transport and the roads in the kind of CBD? So is that a law that if you were the head of my South African motoring constitution, would you pass that law, George?
I would do something to, you know, force the dirty cars out of the system.
Okay,
and maybe that's one of them. But you know, I think every country has an obligation to drive the sustainable energy and you know, longevity of our planet. Mm. And driving the older cars out of the system is one of those initiatives. But the problem is our electricity is still coal generated.
Yeah.
And so while you drive an electric car, that electricity is generated by coal-burned power stations,
yes,
or coal-burning power stations.
Yeah.
That is the bigger problem.
So we need to find alternate fuel sources. So harnessing the energy from the sun would be a wind generator to power these electric vehicles. Because I agree with you totally. There's no point in driving an electric vehicle if you're burning fossil fuels to charge it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, in saying that, an electric vehicle it does reduce the impact on the environment and the ozone by, I'll check it out now, but I think it's by 16 times.
Okay.
So it's not, you know, the whereas when you burn coal and you burn it in your car, a car engine is actually a very inefficient thing. Whereas an electric vehicle is very efficient. So the impact to the environment is a lot lower.
Yeah. So that's a good start.
Yeah.
So this is something that I want to start plugging on a regular basis. And maybe, who knows, in a year or two's time, we'll have established a proper motoring constitution for this country that somebody in the high place will just sign off for us. I don't know if you guys know, but Toyota last week had their Toyota State of the Motor Industry event in Sandton, and a new trust was launched by Toyota called the Toyota Empowerment Trust, and this will kick off in Jan 2018, and it really is a trust to help with enterprise and skills development. The Toyota Empowerment Trust has been seeded with 42 million rand, and what they're going to do with this money is they're going to train its specialized automation technicians, so guys who are obviously monitoring the robots that are used for welding and spray painting. So Toyota have created a fund now to put skilled labor through this initiative, which I think is hats off to them. I really think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the more of these guys that are really well trained, we can get more highly skilled people in plants in South Africa, so that we can start exporting more vehicles.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
No,
so you know, so hats off to Toyota for doing that. And that's pretty much what went down over the last 2 weeks in the news. So some really interesting stuff happening out there, and I know that we normally do a little F1 segment, so George, I don't know if we're going to touch on F1. I know there haven't been any races, but have you picked up anything that's happening? I saw a really interesting article about 10 interesting facts about the first half of the season, stats that have come out of the first half, so I don't know if there's anything.
I'd love to hear those, but no, it's like this camel is dry, bring on next weekend.
Because <Yeah. laughs> they're in the middle now, am I right? When did they start racing again?
Next weekend. It's been a bit of a break, I would imagine they're all kind of fired up and ready to go.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun. Yeah. I can't wait for this weekend. But what are those 10 stats?
Well, here we go. So the only three. So only Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, and Ocon have completed all the races in the first half of the season. Step two, teammates Vettel and Kimi Raikkonen have raced 51 GPs as a team, and that's 19th overall. Only Michael Schumacher and Rubens Barrichello topped the list with 104 races as a duo. Hamilton has led the most number of laps of all the drivers in the 2017 championship so far. He's done 262 laps, followed by Vettel on only 221. Hamilton is also tied with Alan Prost for the most wins at Silverstone. What else was here? The winners list. Hamilton has 57 career wins. He is second only to Michael Schumacher, who has 91. Vettel's got 46. Of the first 11 races of the 2017 season, the street race in Baku, Azerbaijan, the longest single lap was obviously 6 kilometers in length. What else was interesting here? Age is but a number. Britain's winning they're the best represented in the F1 with 4 drivers hailing from their shores, and Germany in second place with 3 drivers. Yes. And
what about the Finns? Because the Finns have got 2, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know how many there are. And then it's called the Big Grand. So the Grand, how do you pronounce this? Chelem. Chelem.
Chelem, I guess.
Chelem. The Grand Chelem is when a driver secures pole position, the win, leads every lap, and sets the fastest lap in a race. And Hamilton repeated this feat 3 times this season so far. So interesting stats for the Brat. he seems to be doing some good stuff in the first half, and I hope he doesn't replicate it in the second, because I don't want him to take the championship. So
yeah, no, I'm squarely in Vettel's camp.
Squarely in Vettel's camp, exactly. Fantastic. So that's the F1 wrap. We do have Chad's obviously not in studio with us today, but he has done a pre-record for us of the new Nissan Navara. But before we get into that, I think it's let's turn our focus off of vehicles, off of cars, and onto the two wheel variants. And Craig, thanks very much for being in studio.
No, absolutely.
And I just think fired up being a business, and I was obviously on your site yesterday. Is built. You run a pre-owned vehicle dealership. And what I really liked about what I saw is that your business philosophy is one of integrity.
Yeah.
And you provide a fantastic service in an environment that is family friendly. And I just, I mean, tell us a little bit about the history of Fired Up and why you got into bike, the bike industry, and how's it going? And then we'll touch on some other points.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been in the motorcycle industry since 2005, and about a year and a half ago, I had this idea of what would happen if we had a new approach on motorcycling, where instead of it being a traditional bike shop, with no disrespect to any other stores, but a store that was based strictly on integrity, where you could walk in and trust that people behind the store, behind the in the back end of the store, would always do the right thing. And of course, that it was a family store, because we identified our customers were married and had children, and that they would want to be involved as well. So we have a section for wives and for children, and we open 7 days a week. And that's working really well for us.
That's fantastic. I mean, I also know, and just by going and having visited the dealership, that I don't know, there's a picture that's painted to me when you go into a bike shop, you know, you might get somewhere with a, you know, a vest on, or I don't know, a t-shirt, and it's really just kind of chill. But I mean, your guys wear suits, and it really is a professional experience to visit the dealership. And I think, you know, whether you could kind of put it on the same levels as a Jaguar, an Audi, a Mercedes Benz, it really is a world-class experience.
Yeah, well, that's where we're trying to position ourselves. You know, we say that we are a five-star experience store, and that's certainly where we're trying to get to. But we want people to have this great experience in our store and understand that they're dealing with professionals and with staff that are all committed to acting with absolute integrity, ethos, and transparency, and will always do the right thing. So we like to dress accordingly.
Yes.
I mean, I like that concept, always do the right thing, because, you know, often when you try and regulate a company's goings on, it becomes very, very hard to regulate every permutation of what might go right or what might go wrong. When you have a philosophy of just always do the right thing, that kind of can be applied to every situation, and you can then retrospectively look at that situation and say, did we do the right thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
And learn.
And you know, it happens more often than you think, because, you know, we're human beings and we make mistakes every day.
Yes.
And we've got a policy that if we've made a mistake, we'll fix it in 24 hours.
Okay.
And it's quite easy. Like, somebody will come into my office and say, okay, this has happened and that's happened. And I just, well, it's easy.
Yeah.
Just do the right thing.
Exactly.
And doing the right thing is always easy. And it just always addresses the situation easily.
Well, that's the thing. And I think if you, sorry, George, if you are dealing with an issue, if something has gone wrong, I think from a consumer's point of view, as long as you know that the issue is being dealt with, then it kind of, you know, it makes for a happier experience at the end of the day.
I mean, we all make mistakes, and, you know, and so do all businesses. And, you know, what I like is the effort that that Fired Up seems to be putting into you know, the business of buying and selling motorcycles.
Yes.
I mean, the Integrity Pack, which is pretty cool, includes free 2-year warranty, free PDI 50-point inspection. What is that 50-point inspection on the vehicle that the consumer is buying?
Yes, that's on the motorcycle. So normally, part of this integrity thing is we said no more forced fees. So instead of charging all these mandatory fees, we said we would do a PDI inspection for free, which is going through the entire motorcycle, making sure that it's ready to be ridden. So that checking the chain, water levels, oil, everything that needs to be done, so that when you collect your motorcycle, it's ready to be ridden.
Fantastic.
And then you guarantee a buyback of up to 80%.
Yeah.
A full tank of fuel. So, you know, you don't have to stop at the nearest garage. You can just, ride your bike out of there. Guaranteed accident free. I mean, how do you guarantee that?
It's getting harder and harder, because there's people out there that are making a living repairing motorcycles. So we take every precaution possible to make sure that the motorcycle is accident free. And it's a combination of doing your homework, checking with the dealers, and unfortunately the motorcycle industry isn't as regulated as the car industry, where you can, where there's a record, but we, it's a trained eye. But if one does slip through the cracks where a motorcycle was accident damaged, and we find out that it was accident damaged, then we obviously take it back from the customer immediately.
And how many of those instances have you come across?
Maybe in the last year and a half, one or two.
Okay. Okay.
So, you know, we have a very, very strict policy for that.
Yes.
If one has slipped through, we don't argue with the customer, but you've done so much mileage, but we just say, bring it back, all your money back.
Yeah.
Or choose another motorcycle, whatever suits you best. And I think the 7-day exchange that we offer and the 80% guaranteed buyback. And a lot of people say, well, but why 80%? And why are you prepared to put that behind a motorcycle?
Yeah.
Because you know you're paying the right price. Because I wouldn't be prepared to offer you 80% of your money back on a crashed motorcycle.
No, exactly.
Or a motorcycle that was overpriced.
Yeah.
So customers have peace of mind that what we put on offer is the right thing at the right price.
Brilliant. One thing on this list that's quite, you know, ingenious in my opinion is an Uber collection. So if your deal is confirmed, you send an Uber to go and fetch the customer to come and fetch their bike.
Yes, absolutely.
That's
because
brilliant.
It's such a small thing, but if you come into collect your motorcycle, you get somebody to drop you off, and so we send Uber to collect you, and we're extending that now to our workshop facility as well.
When you bring a bike for a service, you'll be able to catch an Uber to the office or something like that.
Uber will drop you off and collect you when your bike's ready.
That's brilliant.
That really, really is good. And I suppose that's all about the customer experience at the end of the day. And that's what obviously keeps your customers coming back. I mean, you must have customers that are long standing who have been, you know, with you from, you know.
Yes, but we're blessed. You know, we've got some fantastic, we've got a fantastic team.
Mm.
And we're really blessed to have customers that have bought one customer's bought 15 motorcycles from us. And we've got some customers that buy a motorcycle every 6 months.
Sure.
Just because they can, you know, we guarantee their money back and they have a great experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm one of those guys that I get bored with the same thing. So I like to change, cars and bikes often. You know, it's an addiction, I think. But, we've got lots of customers like that, and we're blessed to have this. And, you know, having the service that we allude to, this 5-star experience.
Mm. Yeah.
Jeez, it's harder. You know, I said to my team, we're going to be this 5-star experience store, and we're going to do this and this and this, and this is going to be the experience. But to get it right is daily discipline, and it's hard work every single day to achieve it. But we commit it.
Well, that's fantastic. Brilliant. And I think as long as you're working towards always achieving that, I mean, that's all you need to do, really.
Absolutely,
you know, every day just stick to your guns and do what your customers now obviously expect of you as the dealership. Craig, we chatted a little bit during the week. There's a number of incidences or scams, and I just want you to unpack that for us, because we've obviously got listeners who do ride motorcycles.
Yes.
Somehow don't think they tune in live because it might be a bit dangerous, but when they do download the podcast, you were touching on some of this stuff. Do you want to unpack a little bit about, you know, some of the fraud that's going down and, you know, some of the scams that are happening out there?
Yeah, as you know, we buy stacks of motorcycles and we hear stacks of stories, and there's a couple that are trending at the moment, and on social media we call them the pretty profiles.
Okay.
Where you get a friend request from a lady, and if you have a look at the profile, you'll see that she's friends with a couple of people that you know.
Yeah.
So you think, okay, fine. Accept the friend request. And then you put your motorcycle up for sale on the site or on the group. And suddenly this pretty profile says, hey, my boyfriend's interested. Can we come and have a look at your motorcycle at your home?
Yep.
And no alarm bells go off, and somebody ends up at your home and hijacks your motorcycle. You know, we've had one customer who, for the sake of 5,000 rand, advertised his motorcycle on social media, invited someone into his home, even though he had the best safety possible. Obviously, they invite this hijacker into his home. They held a gun to his head.
Oh, no.
While they forced him to load his own motorcycle on the back of their buggy, and then they disappeared down the road. The second one that's really trending at the moment is, I mean, I've I've always grown up with always meet in a public place.
Yes.
That's the big theme. So you meet someone in a public place. They hand over the cash. They take the motorcycle. Meanwhile, they're part of these fraudsters or these hijackers are watching the whole thing because they're all involved.
Yes.
And as you drive off down the road, they pull you over and take the money. Then they've got the bike legally. They've got the papers and they've got the money. So really, that's what's really hot at the moment. But of course, there's cloning. There's, you know, that's from the selling aspect. There's cloning of motorcycles, which is starting to become, you know, it used to be really relevant in the car sector, but in motorcycles, they're even cloning motorcycles at the moment.
Jeez, luck. So there's quite a bit of, I mean, you know, bikes are obviously hot property and they do come, you know, some bikes, you know, carry a hefty price tag.
Well, so I think it's driven with the pricing of new motorcycles.
Yes.
Obviously, these criminals and, you know, I think a lot of us have a perception of what a criminal looks like, but they're syndicates and they're really professional.
I mean, it's organized white collar crime, isn't it?
And if one of those criminals walked past you, you wouldn't know.
No, you wouldn't absolutely know.
I mean, a criminal,
they're professionals.
Yeah.
A criminal doesn't dress in a certain way or have a certain kind of look.
Yeah.
They look like you and I. It's just what goes on inside them that's different.
Yeah, exactly.
The motorcycle industry in South Africa, what is your opinion on where we've come from in the last 1, 2, 3 years, where we find ourselves, and where you think the motorcycle industry is going in the future? Because obviously South Africans, by for whatever reason, aren't motorcycle commuters. I mean, I see a lot of them on the motorways nowadays, but we're a car commuter country, you know, that outstrips all other forms of transport. Do you think there's coming a time where more and more people will commute using motorcycles, or do you think it's still a Sunday thing?
Well, I think generally it is still a Sunday thing, but new sales stats paints a completely different picture. Yearly, the BMW R1200 GS is still number one from a new perspective. But the balance of the top 10 sellers are all small-engined bikes. And if I have a look at them, I would say it's probably commercial that's really selling.
Commercial use, like delivery bikes, etc.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Well, sorry, Craig, just to cut you off there, because I've actually got the list of the top 10 selling bikes. This is the list. So this is June 2016 to July 2017, and you spot on the BMW 1200 GS, 891 units sold. Then the Honda CHA 125 Elite, it's a scooter, 368 units. Then the Honda CGX 125, that's the delivery bike. And then a Honda XR 125, that looks like a scrambler, a big boy scooter here, the RTC 170. Then the KTM, what's it, a 1290 Adventure, then the Go Motor Freedom, I'm assuming that's also used as a delivery bike. Vespa in eighth position. Suzuki, the GS 150R, 148 units. And then again, the Suzuki GSX 150F, 142.
So do you think
units.
That's representative of the future? Or do you think we will become a more of a motorcycle commuting type population?
Well, I certainly hope so, but I think South Africans are still, I mean, if we have a look at the new market and the second-hand market, they are so far apart. If I have a look at the motorcycles that we sell, it's predominantly touring and adventure, because South Africans love to get out there, and we have such a beautiful country, and the best way to experience it is still on a motorcycle. And getting out there with your friends and your family on a motorcycle, there's very little that compares to that. Second to adventure and touring motorcycles is naked bikes. And that seems to, where a couple of years ago, no one bought them. But now we're selling a lot of naked bikes.
What is a naked bike?
Yeah.
So a KTM, a 1290 Super Duke.
Okay.
Or a Kawasaki, a Z1000 SX. Or one of my favorites, the BMW, the S1000R.
Okay.
Those naked bikes.
Are they called naked? Are they stripped down? Do they not have parts that other bikes would have? So, I mean, what is the term naked?
Well, they offer super bike performance.
Okay.
But you sit more upright.
Okay.
And they don't have full fairings.
Okay.
So these bikes are getting better and better at what they do. And they're a lot of fun to ride.
Almost like a Street Fighter sort of bike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they don't cost what a super bike does. I mean, a modern super bike today is anywhere from, if you bought them brand new, from 240,000 rand to 300,000 rand, where these naked bikes are anywhere from 140 to 180,000 rand. So they're becoming really popular new, and secondhand, obviously, they're a lot cheaper than that. So yeah, they're becoming really very, very popular, and they're great fun to ride. Mm. You know, the modern bike, it comes with ABS and traction control and quick shifters and all the safety aids,
yeah,
which makes them really a lot of fun to ride.
Do you think riding a bike nowadays is easier than when it was kind of 20 years ago? And I'm assuming with tech and all that kind of stuff, the bikes will always get better, but
absolutely. I mean, I remember one of the first thousands I had was a GSXR 1000 in 2005. And if you ride that compared to a modern 1000, it's jeez.
Talking cheese.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of the first cars I was mad about was a Superboss.
Okay.
And if you drive one of those today, it's the same kind of
rattle
thing.
Trap.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's the same kind of thing. The modern bikes, yes, they're more expensive, but they are so good at what they do.
Mm.
They are definitely a lot safer to ride.
Greg, what would your advice to somebody who's contemplating getting onto a bike for the first time be? You know, obviously come down to the dealership, have a chat with you guys. I'm sure you'll point them in the right direction. What advice would you give to somebody who's going, you know what, I actually hate sitting on William Nicol every morning. Let me have a look at a bike as an option.
So whether it's getting onto a commuter or getting onto adventure bike and seeing this beautiful country of ours, a couple of things I would do is obviously make sure that you've got a learner's license first.
Okay.
And then go for riding lessons.
And that's just a written test, the learner's license.
Yes. Yeah. That's a written test. And then go for some riding lessons, because even though a lot of us rode bikes when we were a lot younger, and we think, hey, it's no problem, I can still ride today. It's great to do that refresher course, and that's something that we offer our customers. Mm. Do that refresher course, because you have many bad habits maybe from when you're a lot younger, and then find a dealership or go to your nearest dealership that will let you test ride a couple of different bikes. You know, and this is why we have the 7-day exchange policy. I tell you, it happens so often that a customer will come in and say, listen, all my mates are getting onto a super bike. So they said, I must buy XYZ bike. So I'm here to buy that. And I'll end up chatting to the customer. Are you sure this is the kind of bike? Because what do you want to do with the bike? And they're back 3 days later and say, oh, please help me. I've made the worst mistake of my life. Actually, what I wanted to do was this.
Yes.
So in order to make sure that you buy the right bike, test ride everything.
Okay.
Don't rush into anything. Everything, it is an emotional buy. You want to get a bike. You're excited. You got your license. You've done a couple of riding tests, and you really want to get onto your bike. I would say test ride a couple of bikes, or make sure that the dealer will exchange the bike reasonably. Yes. So we offer a 7-day, couple of hundred Ks to make up your mind.
Yeah, you're not going to do a trip to Cape Town and then come back and do the exchange.
Yeah, or 3 months later.
All right, fantastic. Well, Craig, and you guys, you located corner of William Nicol and Leslie Drive in Four Ways.
Yes, we're on showrooms on Leslie, and that's between Cycle Lab and Lexus.
Okay, cool, fantastic. George, is there anything else you want to ask Craig?
No, I think, you know, it's great to see particularly bike dealerships taking the approach that you're taking. You know, you're not afraid to kind of hold up that flag of integrity or hold up that flag of doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if all dealerships in the country could act that way, imagine the kind of service we would get as the motoring public from the industry. So hats off to you for, you know, running your dealership in such an integrity way, if that's the right term.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, Craig, thanks very much. Don't go away, because we are going to have a tech segment just now, and there are a couple of questions I want to ask you about electric motorcycles.
Brilliant.
And where that's all going. But right now what we're going to do is we're going to pop across to the clip that Chad sent us, and Chad is reviewing the new Nissan Navara. It's a 2.3D double cab LE Auto, and let's have a listen and see what Chad had to say about this ride.
Hi guys, this week we're going to be chatting about the new Nissan Navara, which Lawrence and myself took on quite a lengthy drive to see if it is as good as people say it is, because it's been getting a lot of good press actually, and that's a great thing as far as I'm concerned. It's been a while since we've actually seen the new Navara, or a new Navara, let's put it that way. The last one actually hit our shores in 2005, it was released in 2004, and the new Navara, well, 13 years down the line. The new Navara actually launched overseas internationally in 2014. We're only getting it now this year, 2017. And it's well worth the wait. Let's put it that way. It has been worth the wait. There's a lot of innovative changes happening here in the Navara, and that definitely makes it one to consider. And it's really holding the flag high, and it's putting up a good fight when it comes to going up against the likes of the Toyota Hilux and the Ford Ranger, and of course the evergreen Isuzu. Now, the one we were driving is the Nissan Navara 2.3D double cab 4x4 LE Auto. And it's the top of the range model. Let's get the details out of the way. It's just shy of 590,000 rand. 587,900 rand. It's a diesel, it's an auto, it's 4x4, it's a double cab, and well, Nissan are only offering the 2.3D double cab at the moment in 4x4 trim. You can get it in the LE and the LE Auto, and then in the slightly lower SE spec as well. The SE starts at 520,000 rand. No doubt they will be releasing and introducing a couple of other derivatives a little down the line, but let's just chat about the one that we were driving. First of all, let's touch on the motor. 2.3-liter turbo diesel, but twin turbo diesel. And that means that it makes its power through a fantastically broad range. Torque starts out at 1,500 RPM and carries almost all the way to the red line, only dropping off just before the end of the rev range. It makes 450 Newton meters. Power comes in at 140 kilowatts, and mated to the 7-speed gearbox, it's an absolute gem to drive. Now, Nissan claims that the average on the combined cycle is going to be about 7 litres per 100. On the open road, we were hovering around 7.9 and 8 in certain instances. So they're a little off there, but that's real-world application. The big thing that really got us impressed is the overall package of the Navara. The Navara was always a stylish option. It was that first double cab that came out and said, well, you know, it's kind of cool to drive a double cab. And, well, this one's not too far off. It's still lacking a little bit in the looks department when it comes to going up against the likes of the Ford Ranger, and especially the Wildtrak and its Wildtrak trim. But this one is a decent-looking buck here. It really is. It's still got that typical C-pillar kick-up of the Navara, so it's unmistakable in that sense. The interior is markedly improved. The old Navara had a terribly plastic interior. It was probably one of its weakest points. And this one, while still hard-wearing plastic, is trimmed considerably better. We had the leather interior in ours, and that does wonders. But despite that, the fit and finish of everything is so much better than in years gone past. And it is very, very quiet. The quality and the silence inside the cabin, we call it NVH, which is noise, vibration, and harshness, and those levels were very, very low. So much so that we were only just detecting a little bit of rumble from the tires, a little bit of wind noise, and you had to really climb up into the higher rev range to be able to hear the motor. So we really, really like that, and very well kitted out. Very well spec'd, even to the point of having an electric rear sliding window. Not the passenger windows, the rear one that heads out into the load bin. That one is electronically operated from just by the driver's right-hand side knee. So that's little touches like that. Comes bundled with navigation and infotainment, but the infotainment is a little hit and miss. Unfortunately, you battle to see the screen in certain sunlight conditions. But other than that, heated seats, cruise control, the whole works. So really, really good. Another very impressive aspect of the new Navara is the way that it drives. Now, it's not only the powertrain and the gearbox, and the gearbox is lovely. For an automatic gearbox, it really is great, especially with that amount of torque going through it. But Nissan changed up the rear suspension. They turned it into a 5-link coil spring rear suspension. And that's more along the lines of a sedan car or an SUV. Now, most double cabs usually sit and bounce a little bit in the back, and especially when you go over an uneven surface, then you really feel it the worst. Not so the case with the new Navara. It rides so comfortably. It really does ride like a big SUV. But despite this and this change to the rear suspension setup, they haven't actually impeded on the loading capabilities. So the new Navara can still take over 1,000 kilograms, 1061 if you want to be really precise about it. So it can still take a full ton in the back there. It can still tow 750 kilograms unbraked or 3,500 kilograms braked. So it really isn't compromised because of the good ride. It's got the good ride. It's super stable on dirt and gravel roads. You can actually do considerably higher speeds than what you think you would be able to. It just really, really drives well. It comes with a 6-year, 150,000 kilometer warranty. The service plan is 3 years and 90,000 kilometers with intervals at every 15,000. So I think that the Navara is actually really one of the prime contenders here. I think that the Hilux and the Ranger really do need to watch out. The only one that's really going to challenge it is the slightly more expensive VW Amarok, but that comes in with a whole lot more power and a whole lot more comfort and convenience. So we are busy testing that right now, and we're going to be comparing the two. But in the meantime, head on over to our YouTube channel, where you can take a look at the video of where Lawrence and myself drove it down to the coast, the Navara that is, and hear our thoughts and how we rank them digitally, virtually, up against their competitors.
Well, thanks to Chad for that review on the Nissan Navara. And like Chad said, you can get over to autotrader.co.za and in our news and review section, that link will be there, and you can take a look at the review and the video that Chad have done on the new Nissan Navara. So let's talk tech, gents, as we do. And let's kick off with what we plan to chat about. And it's just really there are 10 kind of cheap tech installs that any consumer out there could put into their car to just, I don't know, make driving a more pleasurable experience.
Yeah, I mean, we go through this list in a second, but yes. I'm not a big fan of modifying cars. Maybe when I was 19, I was.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. You never know what the result is going to be. So these are great tech kind of enhancements, and you know, some of them are easy to do. You can just stick something on your dashboard,
yes,
or on your windscreen, which is great. But I'm personally not a fan of modifying cars.
I think the only thing I ever modified, and this takes me back to my roots, 1610 for life, is putting 6x9s in the back of my Beetle, and that was the only modification that I ever needed.
That's why I qualified 19.
There we go. So let's take a look at number one on the list here, parking sensor assistant. And if your car doesn't come with one, you can fit one. They cost between 314 and 799 Rand. And if you drive a bucky or a panel van or any vehicle that doesn't offer fantastic visibility, one of these is definitely worth investigating.
Okay, so are these parking sensors that you drill holes into your bumper and install?
I have no idea how the installation works.
Because I would imagine it's that.
Yeah, well, because how else is it going to work? You're going to have to stick something on the rear.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it starts to fall apart for me. Because, you know, as soon as you start drilling holes in the car, if you make a mistake, the panel beater issues.
Yeah,
If you get a professional to fit it, that's great. But I've never seen a professional fit it like the manufacturer can.
But is having a parking assistant really, really, or a sensor really necessary? I know it comes on most modern cars. Mm. And I suppose the binging and the beeping and the, you know, the beeps get shorter together, kind of like a ticker tape would have worked back in the day.
Mm. I don't know. I think parking sensors are probably being replaced by cameras.
Yes.
I use my rear reverse camera a lot more than I use the, I actually switch the beeping.
Okay, so you
off.
Don't need the beeping because you're looking in the camera. Yeah. I kind of find that my eyes still work, and the mirrors that they've given to me in the car were actually put there for a reason.
Yeah.
So
I think it depends on the driver. But only advice I would offer is if you're going to fit parking sensors, just check with Motor Plan first, because
exactly.
If you go and drill holes into your bumper, you could cancel your plan if it wasn't fitted as a factory standard. Check that out.
So, okay, cool. Well, the second thing on the list here is a car jump starter or a power bank kit. I mean, I don't know.
I think that's vital in any car, but that's not a modification.
Is it? That's just a piece of equipment.
I've got two things in my car.
Yes.
Set of jumper cables.
Yes.
And then I've got a electric motor to pump up, you know, flat tires,
which
you can buy. It's very small, relatively inexpensive, and that just sits in my spare wheel.
Yeah, look, I've definitely found a need for jumper cables every now and then. You know, it happens, and sometimes not even me needing to use them, but somebody saying, "Listen, do you have jumper cables?" It's always nice to say, "Yes, let me help you out."
Well, what's interesting here is the power bank kit. You know, is that a battery you keep in the back of the car that can actually jumpstart your car for you?
No, well, now there's smaller cell phones.
Really?
Yeah, you get lithium ion.
I saw one at a battery center not so long ago. It's as small as
a cell phone. It's a lithium ion battery.
Yes.
That you can jumpstart a car or a motorcycle with.
Jeez, like, so what, you just put the jumper cables onto this little battery and
bobs
on, so you don't need another vehicle.
You get them even for trucks. It's crazy.
Wow.
That's more though.
I think that's worth it.
Again, I just come across this stuff so often, so I'd just warn motorcyclists out there, if you are going to jump start your motorcycle, don't ever jump start from a car to a motorcycle. Because the amount of amperage will blow something.
That's good advice.
Yeah, you see, now I would never have known that. I mean, you know.
So there's a fair number of customers that have damaged their suspension ECUs or their ECUs because of the high amperage, and they spark when they touch.
Yeah.
So be very careful. I think you can jump start. Just always read your owner's manual. And I think the same would apply for motor vehicles. Just check. I know some you have to switch the headlights on. Yeah. You have to do all kinds of things just to protect your ECUs.
Yeah, I need to go and get one of those. You know how many times I've jump-started my airplane?
Well, yes, okay. I don't have that problem.
It sounds funny, but it's true, because you don't fly. I mean,
well, it just sits, doesn't it? Yeah.
Two of them. So, you know, you can't fly them all the time. I fly maybe twice a month.
Yeah.
And the battery goes flat.
So know? 9 times out of 10, when you're driving to the hangar, you know you've got a little bit of grudge work to do before you get that thing in the air.
Yeah. So, I've got one of those charger, plug-in charger things that with an extension cable that I use nowadays, instead of jump-starting it. But I need to get one of these power bank things.
Fantastic. Central locking kit with an alarm. I mean, most cars come with that nowadays, don't they?
Yeah, I fitted one of those many years ago, so hopefully they're a lot better now. But the kits that I fitted before were...
What was it about a central locking kit that you really had to have? I mean, what was wrong with just walking around and locking all four doors of a car?
I don't know. I was young, and I just thought it'd be cool to have central locking in my car, but it was a nightmare, and it never worked properly. But I'm pretty sure today they're a lot more sophisticated. Yeah. But I think today most vehicles come with central locking.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, number four on the list, John, in-car DVD player. I mean, I don't know. Not really hard.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got kids and you put them, you know, there's better solutions for a similar price, and that is just tablets with the headrest mounts
exactly
on the back seats for the kids. So, you know, you don't really need an integrated DVD player.
I mean, because no one really plays your DVDs. I mean, those are going to be like tape decks pretty soon. George, to your point here, rear view camera. Yeah, I suppose that helps. It does help.
Well, I mean, rear view camera. I drove the new X6 about a month and a half ago, and the car has multiple cameras, and you on the display in the front, you have the ability to almost see a 360 degree view of the car from the top. Now, it distorts the image a little bit, but it helps a hell of a lot because it takes all of the images and seems to stitch them together so that you've got a almost top-down view of what's around the car, which is brilliant. I think that's the way of parking future.
Fantastic.
Well, the way of a parking future is pushing a button in the car box. It's freaking
sell. Yeah, exactly. This is something that I think everybody should have, and that's a hand-free kit for smartphones in their phone. I still see thousands of people on the roads. George, you see it all the time. We've spoken about it. We look dry in the mouth here, people on their phones in the car.
Yeah, what drives me crazy is you see some high-end vehicles where you know they have Bluetooth technology, and you still see people on their cell phones, which is crazy. It's a proven fact that you cannot concentrate while holding and talking on a phone.
Well, it comes from our inability as human beings to, you know, we think we can multitask, but you can only really do one thing at a time. And it's been proven scientifically that you can't multitask.
Yeah.
You know, your brain switches from one to the other all the time, and you just switch to the phone for too long.
Yeah.
And you're going to have an accident.
No, exactly.
I saw one this morning on the way here. To Craig's point exactly, he's driving a Porsche Cayenne. Mm. You can't tell me that the Porsche does not have Bluetooth, and he's sitting there on the phone, elbow on the door rest, and talking on the phone, doing 120 k's an hour in the Porsche.
Yeah,
silly.
Yeah,
absolutely silly.
You can't control the vehicle if you have to brake quickly. You need two hands on the steering wheel,
and you can't. It's physically impossible to watch the road and your phone at the same time.
No.
I don't care what anybody says; it is impossible.
Actually, I read an article recently where one of the biggest challenges was people on Facebook or
social
messaging,
media, while they drive,
which was they said was becoming more of a problem than drinking and driving in most countries.
Jeez, luck. Well, you know, again, It's illegal, isn't it? But it's another thing that's just not policed well. So,
well, you know, people should start using the technology that's at their disposal. My phone sits in a cradle.
Yes.
That's attached to, you know, the car. And if I need to text somebody, I use Siri.
Siri, yes.
And you won't believe me, but over the last couple of years of using Siri, Siri has learnt my accent.
Mm-hmm.
And all I need to say now is send Tyron a hey Siri, send Tyron a text. And then she says, well, there we go. She just opened up. and then she says, what would you like to say? And
yeah.
9 times out of 10, the text is fine.
Fantastic. Guys, listen, we need to wrap. So Craig, in 2 minutes, what is the state of the nation with regards to, electric, motorcycles in South Africa? Are we going to start seeing more of them being imported? Do you think it's something that's gonna happen like it is with electric cars? What's the lie of the land like?
Absolutely. I mean, Alan Cathcart, when he tested the Zero, he said that it's so good that motorcycles should have been designed this way from the very, very beginning. So no doubt in future, as the battery technology evolves, that we will see more and more of these motorcycles available. They're being raced in the TT. They're being raced all over the world. And even in South Africa, as I said, you can buy the Zero. And if you ride that motorcycle, the sheer thrill that it offers is phenomenal.
Fantastic. So, and I mean, that's the Zero is it part of a bigger brand, or is it a standalone brand? Is it called a Zero?
Yes, it's a Zero Motorcycles, and it's actually headed up by the South African, I can't think of his name now, that used to head up BMW South Africa. So earlier you were talking about South Africans abroad,
yes.
And this is one South Africa that used to head up BMW Motorrad,
yeah.
And he's now heading up Zero Motorcycles.
Fantastic. Well, you know, that's really exciting to see that the bike guys are following suit. Not that they're following suit, they're probably leading in some ways as well. Mm. Obviously, you know, electric tech being put into motorcycles, and that's fantastic. And I think it's the way the world's going. And Craig, thank you so much for being in studio today.
It
really was like having you, and we'll definitely get you back in here, and we can keep our listeners informed about the biking industry and what to look out for and what not to look out for.
Yeah.
George, thanks very much. Always a pleasure having you in studio. And Fazana, thanks for putting everything live while we sit here behind the microphones. And to everybody back at the office who's done the social media stuff, thank you very much.
This is CliffCentral.com.